Good evening, Lehigh Valley, and welcome to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. This is Sally Hanlon, and I'm your host this evening. And we have a very interesting program, and one of the things I love about being a host is I learn so much about the Lehigh Valley as we put these programs together. Before I introduce my guests, I'd just like to give you a little bit of background, and we're going to be talking about something called Promise Neighborhoods this evening. And this is a program that was developed through United Way, and we're going to give you some more detail. But what I learned in meeting with folks prior to this session this evening is that even though we have public education available to all youth, the preparation of the youngsters that go to kindergarten is all very different depending upon where they come from, what their background is, what their culture is, what their neighborhood is. Some children are enrolled in formal pre-K programs. Some have families that go through and educate them before they get to school. But what if they don't have these resources available to them? How can a child that doesn't have this beginning sort of level of experience grow and excel when all those around them are growing much faster? So we're going to be talking a little bit about a program that has been piloted and is in the process of being piloted in Allentown tonight called Promise Neighborhoods. You're welcome to call in at any time and share your thoughts. Make a comment at 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. But right now, let me just introduce you to the gentlemen that are here in the studio with me, besides our producer, Ray Schwab, who's going to keep us on schedule. We have Ed Meehan, who is with the Pool Trust, and he's the executive director, and he's the board chair of Promise Neighborhoods. Welcome, Ed.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Good to have you here at the station. And we have Dr. Cameron Afshar with us tonight, and Dr. Afshar is not a stranger to WDIY. Welcome, Cameron.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Good to have you here. Let's talk a little bit about the two of you first. And Ed, I'm going to let you go first. Give a little bit of your background, the executive director of the Pool Trust and board position with Promise Neighborhoods. And you're involved in a lot in this community.
Yes. Well, and as a matter of fact, the Ryder Pool Foundation, I'm also executive of Ryder Pool, has been a longtime supporter of WDIY. So
that's what I understand. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. We were, I think, one of the early funders of DIY and community radio. So happy to be here this evening. I'm the executive director of the Pool Healthcare Trust. That was established by Leonard Poole, who was the founder of Air Products and Chemicals. Mr. Poole left the residue of his estate on his passing to establish the Dorothy Ryder Poole Healthcare Trust in the name of his first wife, Dorothy. Our mission is to enable Lehigh Valley Health Network to be a superior regional hospital and to improve the health of the citizens of the region. And so we work very closely with our colleagues at Lehigh Valley Health Network, other healthcare providers, and community leaders across the Lehigh Valley. We're increasingly intrigued with the growing body of knowledge that helps us understand that health of a community is related to many other social factors and social determinants. Mm-hmm. So part of my interest in early childhood, part of my interest in things like Promise Neighborhood grows from my day job with the Healthcare Trust and thinking about how do hospitals, doctors, nurses think about building relationships with other entities to do a better job collectively as a community of making sure that all the children in our communities and neighborhoods have the ability to grow and to learn and to succeed. The Ryder Pool Foundation I mentioned, I'm also the executive of that organization, and we fund human services, culture and art, things like WDIY, community development, and public education. And we are again interested in the idea of how do you enable organizations to have information that they can work together on to think about common indicators that we can all work on to improve for the good of the community.
Sort of a collaborative approach, which
collaborative approach based on accurate information and accurate data and win-win-win situations to address quality of life issues for the Valley.
Okay, great. Thank you for that, because I didn't know myself the depth of what the foundations covered. So that's very helpful. Dr. Afshar, Cameron, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you, Sally.
And please talk a little bit about your company and then talk about your connection with Promise Neighborhoods.
We do scientific market research. Our idea is to look at stuff totally agnostically. without perception or anything, just going into it and doing the research and letting the chips fall where they may. And that's what I believe the strength we bring into to our clients, for our clients, that when we do these research, it is not subject to any of our views. It is subject to what the data says. And that's what we bring in. We have been doing this, I'm dating myself, since 1988. So it has been quite a while. And we have maintained the scientific aspect of our process all along.
Now, one of the things and the reason you've been on the show before is because you do the Lehigh Valley
research the businesses, we survey
right.
businesses in Lehigh Valley four times a year to find out what their plans are, what they have done last 6 months, what are their plans for the next 6 months. And if any businesses are listening and you received our emails, please respond.
Yeah, they're not long surveys, so they're pretty easy
Very
to do.
Very short surveys, yes.
So will you do any industry, Cameron? Your research, do you cover multitude of industries?
We cover multitude of industries. Banking has been, most of our clients have been in banking. However, we have a variety of different, from the not-for-profits that you see here, like Promise Neighborhoods, to cement companies, we had even one company that made shirts.
Okay.
It is based on, basically, if you need scientific data about your market, your customers, you need to know who they are, who else they do business with, and I don't want to make this an advertising, but that's what we do.
Okay, and it's that resource that you provide with scientific data that got you connected with Promise Neighborhoods, is that correct?
That's, I assume, by reputation, and because people knew of what I'm doing, I was asked to make a proposal for doing a research for the foundation.
Okay, so let's talk about, where did this come from, Promise Neighborhoods? How did it evolve? Why is it here in Allentown? I mean, I started that the United Way was behind this, but how did it get to that point? And Ed, I'm going to turn to you because you're sort of the keystone with Promise Neighborhoods.
Yeah. Well, let me provide a little bit of background. Again, personally, I've worked in maternal and child health and women and children's issues before I was working at the Bull Trust in New York City and North Carolina and Alabama. And so I've always had an affinity for this kind of work, especially when it comes to children succeeding and succeeding in families and neighborhoods. So my interest is led me to work with like-minded folks in the Lehigh Valley. I think you could go back to the early kind of developers of the idea of Promise Neighborhood didn't call it Promise Neighborhood, and it took place in New York City in a place called the Harlem Children's Zone. And there's a gentleman named Jeffrey Canada who is a social worker. This began in the early 1990s, and I think the frequent frustration of community-based workers, community organizers, social workers to say, you know, we're doing the best we can and we're just not getting the kind of results that we'd like to have. And so he conceptualized the idea of, what if we just started with one block? What if every child on just one block was doing well and succeeding? And if we could do that, if we could do what it takes to enable children on just one block to provide the social services and education support they need, maybe then we can do a second block, and maybe we can do a third block. So this started in the 1990s. This is sort of the kind of a precursor to anything to do with Promise Neighborhood. But what they did very smartly was apply really good business sense to this, created 10-year business plans for what Harlem Children's Zone would do. They tracked results, they measured effectiveness, they measured indicators. And the idea was that they would monitor and grow the program. So by 1997, the Harlem Children's Zone served 24 blocks, then 60 blocks. By 2007, they served 97 blocks.
Oh, my goodness.
I had the pleasure to go and visit Harlem Children's Zone last fall on a day that was almost as hot as this.
And in New York. And, oh, boy.
Yeah, it was a great day. They were very generous with their information. Harlem Children's Zone currently has a budget of about $75 million. They serve about 8,000 children and 6,000 adults, and they provide prenatal care through college counseling. Their success is impressive. 100% of third graders perform at or above grade level in reading and math. That's tremendous. 97% of high school students graduate.
That's incredible.
And 100% of high school graduates apply to and are accepted to at least one college or university. So this is a tremendous success story. The challenge, of course, with doing community-based work is that just a cult of personality around Jeffrey Canada, or can you learn from it? Can you extrapolate it out? Can you take it to your community? What can you do? The federal government was interested in the idea of replicating this. They came up with the concept of Promise Neighborhood, and the Obama administration kind of established through the U.S. Department of Education funding for Promise Neighborhoods around the United States in partnership with the Justice Department and Housing. There are about 90 funded Promise Neighborhoods around the U.S. working on the concept of a place-based longitudinal generational approach of saying, can we get all children born in this neighborhood in 2013, 20 years from now, to be successful citizens, growing, learning, contributing back to the community, going to college, or gainful, meaningful employment.
Nurturing our future workforce.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. I would say one other prototype in Promise Neighborhood is work that the Casey Foundation has done in Baltimore primarily, but in other places, where they've essentially said, you know, we're a national foundation, but we live in Baltimore, and can we think about neighborhoods adjacent to Johns Hopkins University, where we might take a generational approach and say, what if we made sure that all of the services were coordinated in a way so that a family and a child could receive the support they need in an entire neighborhood? So everyone, adequate prenatal care, adequate early childhood education, adequate after-school supports and social services, with the goal of having an entire neighborhood succeed.
Okay, so prenatal care, pre-K education, pretty easy to understand how one can do that. But I think when we talk, there's some other support that you provide for the parents or the extended family through programs like this, or at least the Harlem Children's Zone does. Could you explain that a little bit?
Yes. As we've thought through Promise Neighborhood in the Lehigh Valley, and we're thinking regionally, but right now we're just working in one neighborhood in Allentown, we really want to look at a very comprehensive approach. And I think, first of all, personally, philosophically, and I think everyone associated with Promise Neighborhood in Allentown agrees that parents are the primary educators of their children, that parents and families are extremely important in the success of children, and how do we enable parents to have what they need in order to do the best they can, and especially in the constellation of neighborhoods, whether that's within their faith community or whether that's within civic associations or PTAs, etc. So we're not doing this as isolated programs, but we're thinking about how do we have a kind of interactive effect among multiple programs. So we do have, in the absence of being able right now to provide quality, and we can get into it later, Keystone 3 and 4 star early childhood education for every child, can we provide home visitation for parents so that they are able to get some supports that they need, which serves in a way as a surrogate for mm-hmm. for early childhood classes.
Okay. Cameron, when you think about what Harlem Children's Zone has done and the fact that they've got 20-some years of statistics, is that pretty valid information for us to work with and to utilize as a guide?
Absolutely, and plus the fact that it's not just Harlem. There are so many other areas in the nation that have done this process of going through pre-K. Harlem is such an extensive and complete process, but the concept of pre-K, just to get children into a pre-K so they would be ready when they go to kindergarten, they go to the first grade. As an ex-college professor, I remember having at times having to catch up some of my students to the level of the class, and what you have to do is to slow down the rest because now you have to catch up some people who are not there, and those people will feel inadequate at that point. I can imagine at a young, much, much younger age, that may cause a lot of more problems, mental problems for them, dropping out, stuff like that, feeling they don't belong. And the other kids won't learn as much because the teacher has to catch up the other guys to that level. And this part had been in my brains when they asked me to look at this process the first time round. And we looked at the multitude of data all across the country, studies that have been done for 20, 30 years plus in terms of what happened to the kids that went through these experiences. And there is so much data in this process that when I looked initially, I thought that we have one example or two examples to look. Now, across the country, there are so many examples, plus the fact that so much of this has, because this has been long-term going, they have followed these kids to grow up, to look at the not only attendance to completion of high school or attendance to college, but also number of arrests, median income, stuff like that. In every aspect, it has worked. And when you look at macro data, it makes absolute sense. You have more education on general average, on macro data, you make more money. You make more money, you are less likely to have kinds of needs that forces you to do criminal activities. And you pay more taxes. By the same token, you will think more about that, about your own children, to send them to get educated sooner and put them through pre-K and all of those processes. So this is a continuous process. And starting this part up, it has an impact on the next generation, as these people will have much better income level, much more ability, and better understanding of what happened. So many people talk about their experience and how that helped them move up and forward. And this, obviously, in their own children, they will do that, and that through their grandchildren and so on. So this has a huge impact over time.
Well, one of the things that you had mentioned when we had talked, and you just sort of briefly mentioned it now when you were a professor, but the cost of sort of holding everybody else while you try and catch up the rest of the group, I mean, that's pretty difficult to do in the public school system today when we've got these tests that the teachers have to teach to and all this kind of stuff. So the impact goes well beyond it. It does impact the entire community.
Absolutely. And this is, people sometimes think that this is only about the disadvantaged children. Yeah. No, it's about all of our children. Yeah. Because the other children will be held back because the teacher has to catch up the others. It causes other problems. Somebody who is not close to the level of class will not be paying attention, make noise, all of those things. And I'm speaking of my
From
own
experience.
experience that, of course, the college level. But still, concept is the same, that if you have a couple of students in the class that are not at that level, they get bored, obviously, in the class. And you trying to catch them up, the rest of the class would have to stay at something that they already know, and you are trying to teach the people who are behind to catch up. So this is for all of our children.
Ed.
The idea of promised neighborhood, can you enable an entire neighborhood of children and families to succeed generationally, is a really big idea. And so, first of all, we owe a tremendous debt to the United Way for introducing these concepts and for serving as a fiscal agent and supporting that work. It's really, really very helpful that the United Way has kind of introduced this idea and facilitated conversations with Harlem Children's Zone, et cetera. The question is, where do you begin? And so the board of Promised Neighborhood Lehigh Valley and others have said, you know, you could start at looking at working with high school age kids. You could start with working with pregnant moms. You could start, you know, there's any number of places you could start. Mm-hmm. And we just decided probably the best strategic place to begin would be with early childhood education. Not to the exclusion of other things. We'll grow it as we go. But as Cameron is helping us explain to the community at large, the power of quality early childhood education has very good lasting effects. And so if we have a number of children who don't have benefit of early childhood, who are entering school not ready to learn, which is, you know, a national goal,
right.
And the chances for them to be on grade level by third, fourth, or fifth grade is reduced. They're already starting behind. And so that has an effect on other children in the classroom. It has a ripple effect. So we're beginning with early childhood, but the intention is to really think about indicators across a child's childhood and adolescenthood, as well as the life of families, grandmas and grandpas and others.
Terrific. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back. You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY.
WDIY is proud to partner with the Celtic Cultural Alliance, presenting their summer fundraising concert featuring Barley Juice and the Glengarry Boys at the Sellersville Theater on Sunday, July 21st at 7 p.m. You'll be dancing in the aisles and counting the days until the 2013 Celtic Classic, September 27th through the 29th. More information available at CelticFest.org.
And welcome back, listeners, to Lehigh Valley Discourse. This is Sally Hanlon, your host this evening, and with me in the studio is Dr. Cameron Afshar of KAA Market Research Firm, and Edward Meehan, who is from the Pool Trust, and he's the executive director, and he's also the board chair for Promise Neighborhood. And when we took our brief break, we were talking about what is happening as far as having a pilot area in Allentown. Now, let's tell our listeners, Ed, what that area is. What, geographically, where is this area that you're working on?
We've begun in a 9-square-block area in Allentown, Turner Street to Liberty, Hall Street, which is right near 7th to 10th, and we've done community engagement work in terms of working with residents in the neighborhood, have our offices on 8th and Gordon, and so we have a presence in the neighborhood and some connectivity in lots of different ways with community activities going on. In that 9 square blocks, there are about 5,200 residents. There are 1,200 children to age 18. 380 of those children are under age 5. And so our interest is in those three, right now, talking about early childhood with Promise Neighborhood, those 380 children. I won't get the numbers exactly right, but we know pretty much that about 100 of them have, their families have access to quality early childhood education. So we're reasonably sure that there's, you know, maybe another 200 or so that do not.
So two-thirds, and basically.
Two-thirds. So as we are saying... there may be supports there, and those families might be okay, but we want to make sure that there's an opportunity for families that want their children in early quality early childhood education to have it.
One of the things that I was concerned about, and which our discussion prior to tonight helped me understand, and we can share with the listeners, is Promise Neighborhoods is not a separate program. It's a collaborative effort. It's bringing together other agencies. So it's not that we're setting something new in this neighborhood. We're expanding or helping to focus on what already exists and to make it more impactful.
Yes. The idea of having a Promise Neighborhood is not to provide direct services. We have no interest in competing with existing service agencies or civic groups or organizations that are working. In fact, our goal is to have the conversations with those agencies that are working hard and doing a really good job, but not having the results they'd like to have or not being able to demonstrate the results that they'd like to have. So in a way, we're interested in connecting dots. We're interested in thinking about long-term results and indicators that agencies can agree on, and how do we provide some of the glue to enable that. So we are not a direct service provider, never envisioned to be a direct service provider. The idea would be that Promise Neighborhoods would serve a convening role, a role in gathering kind of data that any one agency might not be able to analyze and look at, and really think about targeted efforts on key indicators. So we just love the early childhood providers that provide services to the Allentown Promise Neighborhood, and we're trying to highlight their work and say, and there are more children who need the work. So how do we enable that to happen? How do we have a community conversation that says, we believe this is really important, and we would like to highlight the fact that more needs to be done, and we need to be smarter and better about how to use the resources that we have.
And how have the agencies responded to this?
We have an early childhood task force that's working together. We're working very closely with Head Start. We've been able to provide 40 spaces available for 3 and 4 year old children in the Allentown Promise neighborhood, courtesy of funders and courtesy of Head Start's good work. I think the study that Cameron is conducting on our behalf, when it's available, the agencies are going to be very interested to learn about. We've had good connectivity with things like St. Luke's Health Network's dental van, and enabling their dental van to be more effective by making sure that children are available when the van comes to the neighborhood. Really good cooperation from Allentown School District. Really nice connectivity. I think there's real healthy skepticism, and rightly so. I think agency says, "Oh no, who's this? Here comes somebody else
taking a piece of my
Who's taking a piece of the pie?" And again, it's about creating win-win-win situations. Let's keep our eye on the prize. The prize is a generational approach. Every child born in that neighborhood in 2013 succeeding in life and being productive citizens, gainfully employed or enrolled in college 20 years from now.
And I don't know whether this was part of your justification for outlining that particular area, but I think what you're doing will also help to sort of stabilize the neighborhood somewhat, because right adjacent to it is the NIS zone, and there's a lot of activity and things happening there that could push that neighborhood, and I think by what you're doing, you're helping to sort of give it a foundation.
I'm reading a report by the Federal Reserve Bank called What Works, and a sort of a retrospective on community development.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm intrigued with the fact that all around the country, people are tumbling to this idea that we need to rethink how we allocate our assets for the right effect.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was mentioning to Cameron before we were on the air, that there are about $2 million worth of foundation grants and programs funded in the Promise neighborhood. And as I said, those agencies are doing a great job. But the results we have are the results we have.
Right.
If the answer cannot be we need more money, because there's not more money coming. So how can we be smarter about working together, more effective? And the way to be effective is to look at some hard data and try to make some smart decisions on what works, what's best practice, what does the evidence tell us, and how do we go about this in an effective way. So to your point about the economic development in Allentown, it's extraordinary. It's amazing. We can all point to communities around the country where there's been that tremendous economic boon and has no effect or negative effect on adjacent communities. So I think the community-wide conversation that we will continue to have is how do we link community development, quality of life in neighborhoods with the economic development that I think we're about to enjoy.
Okay.
And I think I'm speaking to Cameron's
strength here.
His strength. Yeah. But I think that's the prize. Absolutely. That's the conversation.
And absolutely. I'd like to add that fact that they started with this one area. It made it rational from a business point of view. When you're looking at this, it's not a global concept going across the country or something like that. It's real. It's this area. We walked the area, we looked at the whole thing. The notion is not a general pie in the sky type thing. How can we do this here in this area? With these streets, this availability, these buildings around, these kids right here. Not general. And mm-hmm. I love that because it's practical.
Mm-hmm.
You can look at this thing, you can write a program, you can build a process around this thing, and it's applicable. Each part of it, you say, this is where it is. It's not theoretical about something general. It is very specific. I told you I started this totally agnostically. I was asking them that, you know, guys, halfway through, I may come and say, this won't work. We are asking people to bring their children to these schools. We think people are going to do that and jump on it. But we don't know that. So we had focus groups. We asked people, and we discovered, no, there is interest. I mean, these are all things that I learned through doing this thing for this specific area with these people in it, which were people I talked to, love to do that, were looking for something like this. So I got very much interested in this process and learned a significant amount of information and all these data about everybody else who has done this thing and the results that they have observed over the course of some of them decades.
So you'll be able to, with the results that hopefully we get from Promise Neighborhood going forward, you'll be able to have a baseline based on the other communities that have done this, and to be able to track and see where we are against what their progress has
been. Absolutely. Absolutely. It's very clear. All the categories are specified. Everything is so straightforward that we can look at. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. The mm-hmm. wheel has been invented, tested, gone through a lot of roads. We just want to introduce it to this road.
Okay. All right. And this program, Ed, this is a self-sustaining program. This is not part of the federal dollars, correct? This is,
to my knowledge, we do not have any federal funding.
Okay.
We have no government funding right now. We are supported by United Way initially, and we're supported by foundations who appreciate the concept and would like to test out the idea of, can you have an effect at the neighborhood level? So, for example, the Century Fund is the funder for the study that Cameron is conducting for us, which is valuable data, which will be beneficial. I won't make it sound like sour grapes, like, oh, who wants a federal grant? I mean, it would be nice to have. Mm-hmm. But if we are thinking about a sustainable effort,
correct,
we really, as a community, as a region, we really need to have a conversation that says, what are we prepared to do differently? If we can work with government money that will be available to us, that would be fantastic. But right now, we're working with volunteers and local foundation support. Air Products, Century Fund, the Donley Foundation, to name a few, Crayola. We're delighted that there are folks who have confidence in us, and we are accountable to them to say we are working hard to try to see if we can come up with a really transformational way of thinking about having children succeed.
Okay, now this is year one. Are we closing on year one of Promise Neighborhoods? Where are we in the timeline?
We've had some fits and starts, so it depends on where you start the clock. I'd start the clock about 2 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. That's when we kind of came up with the name Promise Neighborhood. It was about a year and a half ago when I became chair of the organization. The United Way is our fiscal agent, so they are our fiduciary, but it's our intention in time to establish a 501c3 and think about a regional approach and expand the concept of Promise Neighborhoods in Allentown and across the Lehigh Valley.
Okay. Now, Cameron, the research that you're doing, when the report that's going to be due out later this summer, early fall, can you just give us a little background about what, I mean, you mentioned focus groups. What all did this encompass?
We start initially to look at many different pre-K programs that exist in the nation. Review them, look at what they have done, how they have done it, success, what methodology they have used. Looked at the critiques of all of these people, all the papers published about this thing, going over all of that in review of literature, looking at everything that was there about what worked, how it worked, and people who said it doesn't work, what those arguments were. Then was a building of a model for this area. To do that, we did a lot of focus groups from parents, from stakeholders, from other people who are providing services currently for children in that area. What are you facing? What are issues? Doing this with all as much knowledge as we can gather ahead of time so that I can provide them with the information so that they can then make their own decisions as what they want to do. But with all knowledge, all information, not only the positive things, because we like something, we only see that part of it, and this part was coming forward with basically all the aspects of it. Building a realistic model there was relatively straightforward because it's a location. We know where it is. Mm-hmm. We know all the areas which are available. What is in this location is not subject to guesswork at this point in time. I am familiar with the Lehigh Valley market, Lehigh Valley labor market, and rates and stuff like that. So those were not hard to come by when we passed the point that, yes, people are interested. It is not built and they will come. No, we went first asked, would you come if there was a school here? And when we discovered that, yes, there is significant interest in that, then we went forward the next step to build this model at, okay, if this is there, then how would this work? What are the costs? 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, different methods of doing this thing. And that's the whole process that they will have to decide as what they want to do.
Okay. And Ed, I think you mentioned earlier that this information will be available to all the sort of collaborating agencies as well at some point.
Oh, yes, absolutely. This is, again, we're very grateful to Cameron for his work. He mentioned that he was agnostic about this. This is one
he's
of
not
the
anymore.
One of the well, it's wonderful to have had the initial conversation, and he's, well, I don't know. I'm going to be very objective about this, and I think the last time we talked, he just about grabbed me by the lapel and said, "This is extremely important.
Yeah,
we have to do this." So we're happy that that Cameron can help tell the story, share it with others. The agencies that do this work know this and understand it. It's difficult for them to tell their story sometimes. So what we need is to have validated information that enables us to speak to folks who maybe don't spend a whole lot of time in the course of their day thinking about, well, what is Head Start and what does it do and what does that mean? So that we can say, this could be a very important project that has impact that extends beyond just making sure a few kids have quality early childhood education. I mean, if you kind of
look at the ripple effect,
if you kind of do a John Lennon imagining for a minute and say, 20 years from now, a neighborhood where all children are graduating high school, a neighborhood where all children are going on to college, what happens to property values? What happens to public safety? What happens to crime? What happens to adjacent businesses? Mm-hmm. What happens to the reputation of the local elementary school? I mean, the kind of multiplier effect could be very, very powerful.
And is that something that you can take into account, Cameron, in your research?
To a very large extent, yes, because of these longitudinal data that shows the drops in the rate of arrest, the increase in median incomes. These are things that we can reach and get the information. But the simplest of all is showing that the children stay in school. The graduation rates.
And college.
These are a fantastic piece of information that we have so many pieces of observation that we can show that this is not just one neighborhood. Everybody talks about Harlem's Children's Zone as an exception. It is exceptionally good. Yes, they do fantastic things. But even areas which are not Harlem's Children's Zone and don't have baby colleges do very well. They're different, but they are doing also very well. And these data shows that we can prove that even after they graduate from college or finish high school and get into the labor force, they are more productive. They have higher income. These are relatively, at that point, become straightforward process to look at this because there are, you have control data, you can compare it and contrast with the children who have not been part of that group. Because of this history of data going from different areas, it doesn't matter if it is in Oklahoma or it is in California or New York, it works.
It works, okay, good. Listeners, we're gonna take another short break. Please stay tuned. This is WDIY Lehigh Valley Discourse.
And I've been taking care of business every day, taking care of business.
Hey, it's us, Click and Clack from Car Talk. Is your car so environmentally incorrect that it creates its own ecosystem?
Donate it through the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program.
This station gets the proceeds and you get a tax break.
To find out more, call 866-789-8627.
Car Talk airs Friday night at 6 p.m. and Saturday at 10 a.m. For more information, visit our website at wdiy.org.
And I've been taking care of
And welcome back, listeners. This is Sally Hanlon, your host this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse. We're talking about Promise Neighborhoods. And with me this evening is Dr. Cameron Afshar and Edward Meehan from the Pool Trust. He's the executive director there, and he's the president of Promise Neighbors Neighborhood Board Chair. Before our break, we were talking a little bit about the statistics and some of the numbers about what happens not only with the children, but the sort of the ripple effect within a neighborhood. And Ed, you had mentioned you had some statistics that you wanted to share as well about high school graduates. And
well, I am generally very optimistic, and I like to look at a glass half full, mm-hmm. and the opportunities that we have before us and the work, the hard work that needs to be done to make this work happen. But just to depict the challenge, we're talking about early childhood and how can we make sure that children enter school healthy and ready to learn so that they can stay on grade level, so that they can successfully graduate. So let me just mention high school graduation rates in the Lehigh Valley. 80% of children graduate high school in the Lehigh Valley.
That's
overall, 80%. Now, in the suburban school districts, it's 90%. In the Allentown school district, it's 66%.
Oh, boy.
For the Latino students, it's 61%. For African-American students, it's 64%. So the disparity that exists is not exclusively the challenge or the problem of that child, that family, or that neighborhood. It's our collective problem.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot succeed as a region. We cannot improve the quality of life for any of us unless we think about the quality of life for all of us. And education is a key. It was certainly a key for me. It's a key for most folks I know, that education is the ticket that you need. So if we have a situation where the disparity exists, that 90% in the suburban districts and 66% in Allentown, that is not a good thing. That is not going to help us revitalize Allentown, and the revitalization of Allentown, Bethlehem, and Easton are really important to the whole Lehigh Valley. So it's an important dynamic. I think there are folks who look at that and throw their hands up and want to point fingers and make blame. We've got to roll up our sleeves. We've got to talk to one another. We've had to have a conversation that says, what are we prepared to do about this? Because it is in all of our enlightened self-interest to do so.
Yeah, we can't put our head in the sand and ignore it.
Right.
You know, we've got, and I know I talk to business owners all the time, and they're looking for that, you know, worker to come out of college or come out of high school and be able to employ, especially small businesses. And it's tough sometimes to find people who have the work ethic and the knowledge and the education to be able to plug into a small business. And that's exactly what's going to happen when they're educated.
Well, and you asked earlier about, you know, what do I think about this work with Promise Neighborhood and the relationship with the Neighborhood Improvement Zone and the economic development going on in downtown Allentown? Well, my thought that we are saying over and over again, and it is my hope and my expectation that our kids from the Promise Neighborhood will be working in those buildings,
mm-hmm.
as accountants, as lawyers, as physicians.
Walking
to work, participating in a vibrant quality of life that we will all enjoy.
Yeah.
And so what do we need to do to make sure that those kids have that success so that we can all succeed?
Yeah. Pretty incredible. And I think probably where we all get lost today is with the rapid pace of change. It's hard to think about 10 years out, 20 years out, and sort of stay the course. It just, you know, we're such a reactive society.
And this doesn't have to do directly with Promise Neighborhood, but as a foundation executive, we collectively, funders, tend to have a very short attention span and tend to be impatient. We gave you a grant last year. Why haven't you changed the world? You know, it took a long time for us to get into the circumstances that we're in based
right.
on things like the high school graduation rates I just cited. It's going to take a long time and some real patience and some real determination over time. So part of the challenge for funders who are used to a three-year funding cycle is to say, how do we have demonstrable evidence that we can be satisfied that in a year or in a quarter that there's progress being made, but how do we stick with it in the long run, because this is going to take a generation.
Yeah,
and that's a mindset change that is difficult.
Well, and going along with that, one of the things I was going to ask is, as your executive director hat, how important is having information like Cameron has and the follow-up to making some of those decisions to stay with a project?
There are so many generous people in the Lehigh Valley. There are so many generous people in the United States of America. Individual folks tend to give with their heart.
Mm-hmm.
Foundation and trust executives tend to be hired to make sure that you're giving with your head and your heart. We could say, well, it's for children, and you know, and folks will give. What we need to do is have some good analysis and some synthesis of information, look at some common indicators, think about what are the targets that we all want to go after, whether it's all kids in the Promised Neighborhood in quality early childhood education, or all kids graduating high school, or you know, all mamas having proper prenatal care, whatever those key targets might be, and then try to apply some rigor, some business management sense, some science to the extent that exists, whether it's social sciences or harder sciences in healthcare, and use the data to drive our decision making, and also be eyes open about what has the experience been, what does the literature tell us, how do we learn about what's going on elsewhere. So Cameron's study is extremely important because it's an objective look that that will help. Cameron's credibility and his approach will enable people to understand it and appreciate it without having to feel like they're participating in a pep rally or some sort of, you know, feel-good exercise. We put some rigor to it. We are also working with organizations like Mission Measurement in Chicago that's helping us think about how do you develop a framework so that you can track results over time and know whether you're hitting the targets or not and what do you need to change. We're also in touch with the Promised Neighborhood Institute out of Policy Link in Oakland, California. And again, we need the Lehigh Valley to participate in this national conversation. How do we share with one another and learn about how to be smart about it? So as a foundation executive, we're looking for hard data. We're looking for real numbers. We want to look for best practices and efforts that will improve the numbers that we want to see improved. So it's extremely important.
In the other Promise Neighborhood-like scenarios that you've seen, has the effort been collaborative with existing agencies so that the model that we're using here is pretty similar to what is elsewhere? Or are we doing something a little bit different with our approach?
Oh, we're the Lehigh Valley.
We're doing different.
I would say there are two differences. And I think part of what we're doing is we are working within the culture and the approach that we problem solve. So, for example, the Harlem Children's Zone, you know, the size and scope that I just described to you, is owned and operated by Harlem Children's Zone, a not-for-profit organization, but they kind of don't have to worry about cooperating with others. They're big enough to do what they do. That's not us.
Yeah.
Other successful Promise Neighborhoods around the country, we've been in touch with the one in San Antonio, Texas. They've been very generous with sharing information with us and how they what their approach is. But they are starting with a bolus of federal money that we don't have. So part the culture and the style of how the Lehigh Valley problem solves that we are respecting and honoring. It's part of working with the assets you have, which is we have to think collaboratively, cooperatively, and think about how to play to one another's strengths because we just don't have the resources to do what other communities do. So I think both of those things make us different. One is that we're working with smaller assets, smaller financial resources, put it that way.
Okay.
And the other thing is that the Promised Neighborhood of the Lehigh Valley is not an own and operate organization. I envision it always to be a relatively small convener, facilitator, dot connector, maybe silo, you know, boundary breaker perhaps. Mm-hmm. But it's all about how do we get the resources to the agencies that are providing services to kids to do a more effective job.
You know, one of the thoughts that keeps going through my head is something that Department of Community Economic Development did a little while ago with a lot of the agencies that get state funding through their sources, and they said, here's a pot of money, here's this money for, let's say, the Lehigh Valley. You as the agencies have to figure out how you're going to divvy it up and work together and collaboratively make sure that you're not duplicating services and all that kind of stuff. That's not our role in the state to do it, but that's your role. And I thought, you know, and I know there was a lot of kicking and screaming when that first occurred, but it makes sense to me that, you know, to foster the collaborative effort, let people work through.
I have tremendous respect for the agencies and the folks who provide direct services. And as a funder, you know, we're only as good as the folks we fund.
Right.
When I look at the challenges they have with categorical funding and restrictions on how funds can be used and how funding cannot be flexible and adaptive to circumstances, it's very, very difficult. So you've identified something that really is very important, which is how do you have the conversation with citizens and residents and neighbors in the community to make sure that what's being done is including them in the design, in the concept, and the execution, that they're satisfied with it, and how do we think about making sure that we can be as adaptive and inflexible as we can.
Mm-hmm.
So if we've got a three-year grant, I mean, I think we're comfortable enough with the funders in the Lehigh Valley that we would want to be accountable and responsible for the funds we receive. But if something's not working, I want to be able to go back and say, can we modify this a little bit because we know the outcome's not going to happen.
Right.
We're still going to be accountable to you, but we need to tweak
it
a little bit
here
or there. So there's a growing kind of conceptual body of literature and thought on something called collective impact. And the idea is how do you get an entire community to think collectively about impact. And I think increasingly, I think thought leaders in the Lehigh Valley probably will be looking to this kind of school concept and say, how do we apply that collective impact concept to this kind of work? And for, as chair of Promise Neighborhood, I would say, how does Promise Neighborhood become a prototype or a model for thinking about, that kind of style?
Because we can't afford to have these silos. We can't afford to have the sort of the turf protection that we've had in the past. We don't have the base of large companies anymore to help support the wealth that we used to have. So,
well, with all due respect to all the folks who are working hard, the resources we have, substantial resources that we put into human services and education, and again, the results we have are the results we have.
Keeps the phrase, it takes a village, keeps rolling in my mind, and that came up, was that Hillary Clinton that did
yes.
that? But it's just so true. It takes all of us working together to, raise the children, to have the types of programs that we need to propel us forward and stabilize.
And the fact that recognizing that everybody has impact on others is not just them and us. It is all of us.
Yeah. Now, Ed, you had mentioned about 60%, 61% graduate rate in Allentown. What happens when a child drops out of school at 15 or 16? What is the impact on the local community? What are those things that we sort of maybe segment and don't think about when we think about that they've lost their education?
Cameron will probably be able to cite the statistical aspects of the difference between high school dropout and not. I think most people have sort of an intuitive sense of what that is. But, in my prior life when I worked with teenagers, I'd talk about, you've got a wide open script. You've got anything you want to do. And as you make choices that limit the things that you can do, you're limiting your options going forward. So the trajectory, instead of going up and up and up, gets leveled out. How is someone without a high school diploma going to be gainfully employed? How are they going to be able to balance a checkbook? How are they going to be able to, keep track of paying their rent and just knowing basic fundamental citizenship things that have to be done? So I think, just without citing specific numbers, when you have a neighborhood or a city that has a low high school graduation rate, you're talking about lots of folks who are not going to be able to participate in our collective experiment in ways that they could.
Or contribute,
yes. And contribute, yeah, absolutely. But it's not just about going on to college. No. College is not necessarily for everyone, but there are plenty of ways to make a contribution and be a productive citizen. But it takes training, it takes education, it takes exposure. And without a high school diploma, it's very difficult.
Okay. There is such a change in mode of production. There was a time when heavy industries were around that you didn't have to necessarily have even a high school degree to work at, say, Bethlehem Steel and earn a good living. Where it's a hard work, but it paid well. Those types of jobs are very few and far between nowadays. As the economy is moving a lot more towards service industries, the educational aspects, educational requirements at the very minimum, becomes a lot more important as we are going forward. Because nowadays is not as much about how much coal you can shovel into the furnace. It's about running a computer, and even for somebody to answer the phone, they have to have ability to work with the computer. And all this knowledge and all of the minimum requirement for getting a very basic job has significantly increased from 30, 40 years ago.
Well, you think about manufacturing today. Manufacturing is running a computer and knowing how to program it, and if you have a problem, how to adjust, and so that's all still part of education.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I moved to the Lehigh Valley in 1981, and so I moved here at the tail end of, you know, Bethlehem Steel, Mack Truck, you know, and I moved to a community that was a very much of an industrial economy. And in the time that I've lived here, we've transitioned from an industrial economy to a service sector economy to, I'm not sure what's happening next. It's an electronic mm-hmm. technological economy. But I absolutely agree with Cameron. I mean, my dad didn't have a high school diploma and successfully raised a family and could make a living. But, you know, he made his living with his back and his arms. Mm-hmm. In this day and age, it's possible to have a job like that, but there are not as many as there once were.
Right. Right.
Significantly. The impact of that decade on Lehigh Valley, I checked the taxes paid, W-2 taxes paid in Lehigh Valley, compared it to 1979. It took the Lehigh Valley to 1988 to get back where it was in 1979, adjusted for inflation, for just the W-2s, basically because all of a sudden those high-paying jobs went away. Mm-hmm. And although a lot more people were employed, the jobs didn't pay as much. And that is the start of this process. You know, we have a time that people are, automation was taking place of a man's muscle or a woman's muscle. But now this system is taking part of what our brain's gonna do. And it is consistently going in that direction. So more education, significantly more education would be needed in 30 or 40 years, even for basic jobs.
Wow. Well, we're just about at the tail end of our conversation. It's gone really quickly. Thank you both. If someone wants to learn more about Promised Neighborhoods, is there a way that they can find out? Is there a website? Is there anything that...
PromiseNeighborhoodsLV.org.
Okay.
And we are on Facebook, Promised Neighborhoods of the Lehigh Valley.
Okay.
I don't do Facebook, but some folks are fond of it. And if you do, look us up.
Okay. Any last words either one of you would like to share before we sign off for Lehigh Valley Discourse?
Well, I greatly appreciate your hosting us, and WDIY is a very powerful tool for the Lehigh Valley for us to all learn and improve. So thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.
I second the motion.
All right. Well, thank you all for listening this evening. This is Sally Hanlon, and with me this evening is Ed Meehan and Dr. Cameron Afshar, and we talked about Promised Neighborhoods. So keep your eyes open. The report's due out end of August, September, and hopefully we'll hear a little bit more, and you'll be able to support what we're doing over in this area of Allentown. Have a great evening. Stay cool, and stay tuned for Celtic Fair.
And you're listening to WDIY in Allentown, 88.1 FM and HD, listener-supported community public radio. That's WDIY at 88.1 FM in Allentown and Bethlehem, and on translators 93.9 in Easton and Phillipsburg, 93.7 in Fogelsville and Trexlertown, and on the World Wide Web at WDIY.org. The time right now is 7 o'clock. Lehigh Valley weather. Currently, it's 96 degrees. Tonight, there will be scattered thunderstorms with a low of 75. Friday, scattered thunderstorms, high of 97 and a low of 74. And Saturday, heavy rain, high of 92, low of 67. Stay tuned for Celtic Fair on WDIY.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Speer. Detroit, once a symbol of American industrial might, has become the largest U.S. city ever to seek bankruptcy protection. Officials announcing today the Motor City has filed for Chapter 9 bankruptcy. Michigan Governor Rick Snyder, in a letter approving the move, says there was little choice given the city's dire straits.
From a financial point of view, let me be blunt. Detroit's broke. It's been spending 38 cents on the dollar towards legacy costs. That number was projected to grow to 65 cents on the dollar. That's not a sustainable situation.
Today's filing leaves open this question of whether municipal employees could be laid off and basic services such as trash collection and snow plowing scaled back. Between 2000 and 2010, the city has lost a quarter of a million residents. The city's long-term debt is believed to be more than $14 billion and could be as high as $20 billion, according to Kevin Orr, a turnaround expert brought in by the state in March. President Obama struck back at Republicans who continue efforts to undermine his health law. As NPR's Julie Rovner reports, he used a White House speech to try to regain the upper hand in the PR wars over the embattled measure.
Just a day after the Republican House voted to delay key parts of the Affordable Care Act, the president insisted the parts of the law already in effect are working and those yet to be implemented are on schedule. He also accused Republicans of continuing efforts to play politics with the law.
Some of them seem to think this law is about me. It's not. I already have really good health care.
But while the White House continues to point to places where the law is bringing down health care costs, Republicans continue to point to examples of costs going up or employers cutting workers' jobs or hours. Meanwhile, the public remains mostly confused. Julie Rovner, NPR News, Washington.
Senators approved President Obama's nominee to head up the Environmental Protection Agency. Senate Democrats consider Gina McCarthy, who's headed the agency's air pollution office since 2009, to be a strong environmental champion. Republicans, however, criticized her for issuing regulations they say hurts the economy. Labor Department says the number of people applying for first-time jobless claims in the U.S. fell last week. NPR's Dave Mattingly reports they fell